You're listening to The Cowboy Pages. Come with me, Christy Crowley, as I travel America in search of cowboy poets and their wisdom. Today's book, Elko, Nevada. Chapter 3, The Critical Virtues. Featured poet and performer Paul Zarzyski has the rare distinction of being a rodeo poet. That's right. Mr. Zarzyski not only wrestles with words, he's battled bucking broncos in rodeo arenas across the country. My first introduction to Paul was seeing him perform his work at the Elko Gathering about 3 years ago. His energy is utterly electric, his tone often bombastic, his material sometimes outrageous, and his spirit, well, it's large enough to fill Carnegie Hall. When you hear Paul's work, you're put in mind of the great beat poets, not only because of his use of language and rhythm, but also because of the subject matter he chooses. Paul's work always feels a little dangerous and a little naughty. And even so, I just can't help coming back for more.
Bob Dylan Bronx Song. I rode the bronc Whiskey Talks. In the same arena, Dylan sang Simple Twist of Fate. Bucking shoots on hallowed ground, big gray stud horse skyward bound, where Bob in cowboy-hatted crown rode hard his concert stage. I rode the bronc Whiskey Talks. In the same arena, Dylan sang Like a Rolling Stone. Key of C with jazzy licks, stopwatch clicking all eight ticks, my spur rowels reached for cosmic kicks out in the music zone. I rode the bronc Whiskey Talks. In the same arena, Dylan sang Knocking on Heaven's Door. Risk it all for just one song. Some losing's right, some winning's wrong. This ride might last a whole night long. A buckle if you score. I rode the bronc Whiskey Talks. In the same arena, Dylan sang All the Tired Horses. They cheered us from the bleacher pews. The organ groaned communion blues. I gave the nod, they lit the fuse with atomic torches. I rode the bronc Whiskey Talks. In the same arena, Dylan sang John Wesley Hardin, gunfighter of a bygone time. Pistols sing and bullets rhyme. Church bells in the village chime when heroes are departing. I rode the bronc Whiskey Talks. In the same arena, Dylan sang Forever Young. Old hearts beating in reverse. Lady Luck in see-through skirt. Music's blessing, music's curse. God's songs forever sung. Though I've hung up my bareback rigging, the rough stock days are far from dead. Bob Dylan's out there still a-gigging, and I'm here slinging words like lead. Poetic souls still buck unbroken. A bronc is but a song unsung. Guitar picks and spurs a-stroking. The desperado West unwon. I rode the bronc Whiskey Talks. In the same arena, Dylan sang Every Grain of Sand. Plug the juice into acoustic. Beat the drum until you bruise it. A pound of flesh, a pound of music. The blood, the bone, the band. I rode the bronc Whiskey Talks. In the same arena, Dylan sang Blowing in the Wind. How many shows, how many broncs, how many two-bit honky-tonks, one half sloshed and one half zonked, forgive us if we sinned. I rode the bronc Whiskey Talks. In the same arena, Dylan sang Shelter from the Storm. Twin universes parallel, which one's heaven, which one's hell? Two sisters kissing at the well, mankind lacks a quorum. I rode the bronc Whiskey Talks. In the same arena, Dylan sang Hurricane. Old Bill Pickett dogs a bull, while strange fruit hangs in orchards full, pure hatred with its downward pull, a far, far cry from Shane. I rode the bronc whiskey talks in the same arena Dylan sang Thunder on the Mountain. Youth ain't wasted on the young. No holy grail need touch their tongue. They'll drink up truth if truth is sung straight out of the fountain. Though I've hung up my bareback riggin', the rough stock days are far from dead. Bob Dylan's out there still a-giggin', and I'm here slingin' words like lead. Poetic soul still buck unbroken. A bronc is but a song unsung. Guitar picks and spurs a-strokin', the desperado West unwon. I rode the bronc, whiskey talks. In the same arena Dylan sang, Lay, Lady, Lay. Don't need no re-rides of the past, no flags a-flying at half-mast. I pledge allegiance to what lasts. There's nothing more to say.
I want to ask you a little bit about rodeo. How does one even begin that life? I mean, what is...
For me, with great difficulty, yeah, I did go to a couple of bucking horse schools, clinics, I guess is a better word. And I did do one or two of those. But to answer your question, you just keep getting on. And getting on, and try not to get discouraged, and believing that if you just keep getting on and shaking your face for the gate, and putting your whole heart and soul and pocketbook into the apprenticeship years, there's a chance you might start fitting some rides and making it to the 8-second. Tutor and maybe making it even to the pay window. And that did start happening after 2 or 3 years of a lot of really, really hard knocks and discouragement. I mean, it was the hardest thing, much, much harder than learning to write a poem, than learning to craft a poem on a page, the hardest thing I've ever done. But nothing compared to Man on Wire. Nothing compared to Philippe Petit, who strung the high wire between the two trade towers. And with his pole and without a net and without permission, after being up all night stringing that wire, taking his pole, stepping out on that wire with his left foot, removing his right foot from the edge of the building and walking out. And going back and forth 8 times, man on wire, the greatest athletic physical feat of all times, forever and ever, amen. Riding broncs and bulls, child's play.
Let me ask you one other thing about your rodeo life. You left it for a time and then went back, yeah?
I did. I was in my late 30s and I wasn't winning. You need to know that I barely a couple of years paid my way. I was not a champion. You could exercise your wildest imagination. I learned to occasionally fit a winning ride and get a check, and that kept me going. I mean, I kept hoping to get better, but I reached a plateau probably in my early 30s, and I could compete, and I won some shows, and I'd go to make the top 10 a couple times and go to the finals, but I wasn't very good, but I loved it as much as I've ever loved anything in my life, and so I stayed with it until my late 30s, and I gave it up. I walked away. Had some back problems, and then I turned 40, and I found out they had a senior circuit, an old-timer circuit, and I got on a bunch more horses. I really missed it, and then finally, after a couple of years, I just said, all of my old rodeo partners had hung up their spurs, and I was driving by myself, and it just wasn't, it was over, mm-hmm. It was probably over, years and years prior to that, but I hung on, I just clung on with everything I had as long as I could.
Paul has a new album out called Steering With My Knees, and it's fantastic. I've been listening to it in the car and seem to hear something new each time it plays. You can, of course, preview the album and purchase it on iTunes. Paul described the producing experience and the year and a half spent in the studio creating the album. I asked him, after all that work, how it felt to go back to the blank page, to go back to creating poetry from scratch.
When we finally got this thing off to the manufacturer, I really needed to go somewhere else. And it was so powerful for me to go back 40 years. I started writing poems in Richard Hugo used these national, they were called national notebooks, hard blue cover and lined paper about, a half inch thick. And I was afraid they were going to quit making them, so I bought a trunk full of them, and I still I still have plenty of them. And I went back 40 years to writing poems in pencil in these notebooks, and that's what I've been doing for the past month or two. And I will not take a poem from the notebook to the computer, because every poem I've ever written has gone through my mother's beloved 1952 baby blue Smith Corona typewriter. Mm. So just before Elko, just to get me in the mood, to get my motor running, I'm behind the bucking chutes, okay? And I'm trying to get my mind in the middle, and I'm trying to get revved up. I ran a dozen poems through Mom's typewriter, and the keys were real stiff. I hadn't used it for a long time, and it could use a new ribbon. I don't know if we could still find them. We will eventually, but it slowed everything down, and it, from being in the studio and all of this chaos, trying to bring all this music and trying to get it right, and things weren't working, and going back to scratch, and it just brought me back to the essence, the simplicity of the journey, the absolute pure love of the creative journey, writing these poems on paper. And when you fill up a page with pencil, and when you're writing passionately and breaking leads and taking another one because you're pressing too hard, the pages fold, they curl up like a brook trout you just caught out of Flat Creek, and you brought it home and put it in flour and put it in the cast iron pan. It curls up. You got to keep pressing the tail and the head down to keep it flat in the pan. And the pages curl up, and you're falling in love with this graphite, with the sound of this lead on papyrus, on paper, digging in and making these words. And then you take it to the Smith Corona, and it's just a hunt and peck, one slow letter at a time, and it just slowed everything down in such a beautiful way. And I've said in print that creativity rhymes with infinity. And so whenever I think of creativity, I think of making these journeys out into the deepest reaches of the musical universe, out into the deepest reaches of the old cowpoke cosmos. I want to go where Stephen Hawking goes. Mm-hmm. I want to go where the definitive poet of our time goes. I want to make those discoveries. I want to go Captain Kirk, Star Trek, where no man or woman go boldly, where no man or woman has ever gone before. And slowing it all down, you would think, well, no, you got to get on a rocket ship. But no, you're out there in space where things slow, where the movements are much slower. And it really prepared me for coming here this week. Mm. Difficult, very difficult, because I live in solitude. I live in solitude. I live with the muses, and I live with this creative process. And you know, I talk to my wife, and I talk to our dog, and I talk to the horses, but I don't talk to a lot of people. And then you get to Elko, and there's so much noise and chaos, and people are pulling you 20, 50 different ways at one time, and it makes you yearn to go back into the into the old badger hole where you can just you and the muses, just you and your very exotic, erotic muses trying to make these trips, these wild ass trips out into the deep reaches. What was the question?
The day the war began. I fed the dog and he was glad. A bald eagle lit in the red willows ignited by a sinking winter sun, and prairie chickens swept low in squadrons over the hay meadow. Wind swirled through glacial upthrust country around the nose cone rock named Haystack Butte. Old snow smoldering during countdown. I breathed hard, toting hay bales and grain to the horses, to a field mouse trapped in the slick tin feeder. Undaunted, it sat on its haunches and lifted with deft fingers a single rolled kernel of corn and ate in the warmth inches from the filly's nostril. Three lone coyotes on a trio of knolls stopped me cold in the center of a triangle of cry. They called to mind the Hopi, their ancient tablet warning of this war. East of here, a crow flown mile, the missile silo lights, powered as always by the right darkness, flickered on, less innocuous in the dusk of that day. I forgot I'd already fed the dog, licking his bowl clean a second time within the war's first hour. So lovely, the oblivion of another world where instinct says, this simply, live on.
Maybe listening to a reading, a neuroscientist talking about neuroplasticity, and of course we all care now about staving off Alzheimer's and dementia and those kinds of things. And he was actually talking about the way we deal with time. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was so interesting. You know, I remember being a kid and, you know, your grandparents would say, oh, time just keeps going faster and faster. And as a kid, you think, you know, summer feels forever, and it feels like 1,000 years till Christmas.
Right.
And now, at my age, I'm feeling that, like, gosh, the year went by so fast.
Right.
And that trickiness of time. But the scientist was saying that he believes that some of it has to do with repetition, mm-hmm. that when you're young and everything is new,
right.
you're learning it, and it's taking it feels like it's taking time. But as you get older and you repeat these things over and over again, mm-hmm. they become so set mm-hmm. that you're not engaged in the same way and the time feels compressed. Mm-hmm. And he was saying that he makes a choice to try to take a different route home every day.
Interesting.
Which is, that's a huge undertaking, you know?
Right.
And that it sometimes takes him an extra 45 minutes mm-hmm. to get home, but he feels like it's part of his brain exercise. Mm-hmm. And you know, the application to me in creativity is really interesting. You know, I have a creative life, but I can dig my wheels into that and spin them. Even though I'm living a creative life, am I creating something new? Am I pushing myself to not just repeat the thing I did last year?
Right.
And it's so easy. And I think I'm not operating with the kind of fan base that you're operating with. Right? Nobody knows my work, but lots of people know your work. So the pressure that you must feel at some level to give them the thing that they loved last time must creep in occasionally. You know, how do you sort of kick off those? I mean, you know, I have poems of yours that I love, and there is sort of this wonderful thing.
You're the one.
I'm the one calling. But there is this lovely thing about coming to Elko and hearing a poet perform a piece that you know and love. Mm-hmm. It feels like going home. You know, it's like, oh, that greatest hit is here. I know that line, and I get to hear them say it. But you can't want to keep performing the same thing you've been performing for 30 years.
No,
I don't. That must be mind-numbing.
No, and I've watched it happen with other people, and I just absolutely refuse to become an old poet reciting old poems at an old venue to old people, to an old audience. I said them both, to an old audience composed of old people. I mean, I hope that doesn't sound mean, but that is often the case in these rooms here. I mean, we have not done a stellar job over the decades of bringing young people into the fold. And so many of my dearest poet friends are gone already. And the dearest of them all, Wally McCrae, is going to be 80, I think, now in February. And I don't know if he'll come back again. He has a hard time getting around. And I got to share the stage with him last night. And of all things, we did a program titled Boyhood Stories. And so we celebrated, in large degree, our youths. Two old guys on stage celebrating our youth, you know. It gets confusing. To answer your question, I do not... And I'm going to brag about it. It's the only thing I'll brag about because there's two Zarzisky crucial virtues. There are the two Zarzisky crucial virtues. Virtue number one, defiance. Dylan Thomas, do not go gentle into that good night. Old age should rave and burn at close of day. Rage against the dying of the light. I did a poem the other night called Roadwork in the Boneyard, and a poem of defiance. I am writing a lot of poems of defiance, but trust me on this because they seem polar opposites, but the second crucial Zarzisky virtue is humility. And somehow they circle around and become connected at the soul, at the hip, at the heart. And summoning the virtue of humility, let me just make a very mild boast that I do not sit there and write for an audience. I write for me. I write for whatever is listening, whatever might be listening out there in, again, the far reaches of creativity's infinities. And the writing process for me is extremely youthful. It's visceral. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've said it in my essays that writing poetry, for me, it's a contact sport. Yeah, it's visceral. I mean, if you don't metaphorically work up a sweat and if you're not breathing hard when you come out of that room, and if you don't feel like you've just gone 15 rounds with a vicious contender, then for me, it's not a good shift. And it has a lot to do with trying to follow my mentor's, Richard Hugo's, advice, and that is to just fall in love with the sounds of words and to try and make a lot of noise in my poems. I'm constantly wrestling with words, very loud words, and words that bring musical notes and chords to the lines. And I love rodeo poet as a distinction because even in the poems in which I am trying to convey sensibilities that are not physical. I'm still trying to make those lines jump and kick across the page.
There it is. Defiance. Paul Zarzisky reminds me that we must stand in defiance, not only to the chatter and ugliness of the outside world, but also to the parts of us that want to sit down and give up. He reminds me that writing can be a contact sport and playing football pure poetry. He reminds me that the most defiant act can be a line of verse shouted by a disenfranchised mob or a quiet prayer for one's own enemy. I'm thankful today, especially today, after reports of another mass shooting in America, that Paul has reminded me, even when my fears are gigantic and my heart crushed, a little defiance might be enough to keep moving forward and to keep seeing the beauty all around me. I'm thankful to you too for listening. You can learn more about our show, Cowboy Poets, and see pictures of my travels at thecowboypages.com.